Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly are, or did they change history? Good evening, and welcome back to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago.
We give each movie a memory score and then rewatch the movie to see whether or not it's better or worse than we remember, and then we score the movie again.
With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
Well, my good evening would suggest I'm tip-top and on top of the world.
It would,
however,
yeah. Oh.
I have a cold.
Yeah. It's your turn now.
Can I... Any sympathy of any kind?
I had it a couple of weeks ago. Probably not the same one. But, so I feel it, yeah.
Did I give you
you'll,
any...
You'll get there.
Did I give you any sympathy when you had a cold?
The jury's still out.
So fine. Well, I don't deserve sympathy then. That's fine. other than a really bad cold, I'm good. You?
Good. Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Get in there.
Excellent. When you say get in there, precisely where are you getting? People always say that.
Where I need to be.
Okay. I mean, I could probe.
You could, I suppose, yeah.
But I won't.
Okay. Wherever I'm needed.
I thought you were going to say, wherever I lay my hat. Well, moving on, there must, of course, be an enticing and exciting Sam's Anecdote of the Week.
I don't know if this one classes as anecdote, but I've discovered something at the weekend that we've kind of invented our own language for film. So outside of this podcast, if we say, like, the Cardellini manoeuvre, it gets lost on whoever you're talking to. Mm-hmm. So, sorry about that.
No, everyone. And the Spiderwick manoeuvre, of course.
Yeah.
But there will be a small, but I hope a vociferous group out there that understand that when we say the Cardellini manoeuvre, they know what that means. And if you're new to the podcast, it means we add a point to our final score for an actor or actress who just raises the bar based on the fact that Linda Cardellini always gets an extra point for any movie she's in.
Yeah, exactly.
Precisely. And on that early bombshell, we've had a lovely email from a gentleman called Kyle, who is not a million miles away from where I am, so I won't say where it is. And he points out that he's an avid listener to our podcast, that he actually knows me, which is worrying.
Oh.
And didn't know that I did a podcast and found it. So he listens to the podcast, and he listened to our most recent episode about Sky High and knew that we were moving on to the Hulk. So he's emailed in with a question. And the question that Kyle asks is, Ang Lee was a very interesting choice to direct a superhero movie. More on that later. Are there any other directorial choices that we can think of where the director does not actually seem to match the source material? Question mark. Good question.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, that seems like a proper film analysis question. I'm not sure how we're going to manage it.
I know, yeah. I feel like there's something somewhere. There's probably like a Marvel movie. I suppose, arguably, at first, Taika Waititi was a very brave choice for a Thor film, but yeah, that worked out in his favour.
Yeah, interestingly enough, when I saw the question, my mind went to Thor, but it went to the Kenneth Branagh Thor.
Yeah.
Which is very kind of Shakespearean, very deep, very dramatic, very serious. And actually, if you follow the arc of the Thor movies, and you go from the first one to the last one, they're completely different films.
Yeah. I've got another answer, but it's a slightly controversial film.
We love controversy. Go.
Okay. I feel like Joss Whedon for the Justice League film was a bit of an odd choice. Mm-hmm. I feel like they brought him on because of Avengers, mm-hmm, but he also was picking up after Zack Snyder, and I think it should have picked someone with Zack Snyder's actual vision or closer to it. Yeah.
Back in movie history, I suppose you could argue that Leonard Nimoy, him who played Spock in Star Trek, was an odd choice for the comedy movie Three Men and a Baby.
Yeah, true.
but still actually a pretty good movie. Did a good job. But I couldn't even, honestly, I went straight to Kenneth Branagh doing Thor. But only because of where Thor ended up, because, you know, Taika Waititi may also have been an odd choice based on the original choice of Kenneth Branagh. But it's a really good question, because I tend to think that certain directors make certain types of movie, and it would be difficult to kind of say, oh, this didn't work because, and it was all the director's fault.
Yeah.
I think I know what I mean while I'm saying there. So, Sam and I have been away, and we have watched the 2003 classic Ang Lee movie, Hulk, which, from memory, I gave a score of 1. You?
I also gave it a score of 1, yeah.
Question. Do you think your score will change? Yeah. Straight in there.
My score has changed, yes.
I'll start that again. I'm going to begin with what I like to think of as Dad's lead-in question. In 2016, a particular film critic who will not be named has had this to say about the Incredible Hulk movie. He said, "It's a genuinely great example of cinematic pop art that deserves a reappraisal."
Right.
Went on to give a fairly positive review of the movie some 13 years after it came out. How far would you agree with that statement?
Well, I would also just add that when I was trying to find my trivia, I saw a lot of positive reviews for this, and I think they were fairly recent, but I would totally agree. Without giving too much away, I do think that this film in later years has been a bit overlooked in a way. I think I want to get into that a bit later on.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know if you feel the same.
Well, I think it just definitely, I mean, we gave it a memory score of 1 because I do know that when we watched it in 2003, you were very young. But it should have been a movie that was right in your wheelhouse. And I think we would both agree that it was quite boring, quite slow in parts, didn't really get going. And when it did get going, it wasn't that climactic. But I think there are definitely elements of it that deserve a little bit more attention that may well have been overlooked. It certainly has more of a beating heart dramatically than a lot of the subsequent Marvel movies had. Yeah. I think there's definitely an attempt to tell a story about, you know, a father and a son, and it's all a bit Freudian, and then a father and a daughter, and it has a theme that runs through it like that. So I think that is a fairly fair statement. Terrible sentence, but you know what I mean. But I do think there are some major issues with it, though.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, I agree with that completely. I do also, well, probably a bit too early to bring it up, but I do think Danny Elfman was sort of fighting to rescue the film in a way with his soundtrack. So at least someone was trying.
I was gonna ask you about the soundtrack, because actually, the one thing I noticed in the movie as I was watching it is there are long periods where there is no music. And then when the music does kick in, you're right, it is doing something. But it's doing that thing that Danny Elfman always does. I just have a thing about Danny Elfman. I just think it's a bit copy and paste. Is that fair?
Yeah, there was a lot of moments where I thought, this sounds a bit like Spider-Man. So I think it does, and definitely copy and paste, because while I did sort of enjoy the music, there were a lot of bits here and there that were just the same bit of music over and over again, which was a bit frustrating to watch, because you want, like, your eyes aren't having a good time, at least your ears should, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's such a good way of looking at it. My eyes aren't having a good time, but my ears should. That's so true. And of course, you and I would both agree that a soundtrack can make or break a movie, right?
Yeah, exactly.
To cite an oft-quoted example, if you take the music out of 60% of the King Kong movie that Peter Jackson made, it's not a very good movie. You stick the music back in and it becomes something else. Let's go into cast. Eric Banner, appropriately named, as Bruce Banner. What did you make of his performance?
I had a photography lecturer that looked just like him. It was really weird.
Was he a better actor?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I still know him, to be honest. Yeah, I thought that's an interesting choice. I hadn't really seen him in a lot before that or since that. But I think he knows how to do the role well enough as the Hulk, but he doesn't have that sort of... And I think this is to do with the story. He doesn't have that inner battle between him and the Hulk that you would see later on with Edward Norton or Mark Ruffalo's portrayal. But with him, it was just sort of... It was like he was playing the character that he was playing but can't turn into Hulk. It's like we're two separate movies in a way. And I think he only did one of those movies well, if that makes sense.
I know exactly what you mean. I think that... I think what the filmmaker has done is trying to find a proper actor with range who can play grim and moody. And as it turns out, not much else, because he's pretty joyless in the whole thing, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I know four Hulks. There would be Bill Bixby from the 1970s television program, who shared the role with Lou Ferrigno. There would be Eric Banner, Edward Norton, Mark Ruffalo. Now, you probably know three of those four. Where would would Eric Banner's Hulk sit on your list?
Oh, see, I'm not the biggest fan of Edward Norton.
Right. But
I don't think I could put Eric Banner above that. So he'd probably be... in my three, probably third, I would say. And that's nothing like against him or anything. I think it's just the way the character was portrayed and written.
Yeah, and I do think he does have an intensity that brings something to the role. He does have a kind of hidden rage. And I think I don't know that this is true, but I can see a meeting between Ang Lee, the director, and Eric Banner, the actor, in which he says, think Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Think of this rage that's bubbling under this veneer. And I think he carries off that pretty well. The only other film I can think of that we've seen with Eric Banner in is the Star Trek movie from 2009, where he plays Nero.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's pretty good in that, isn't he?
Yeah, I liked him in that, I think, yeah.
But again, the same brooding intensity and kind of, you know, Ahab chasing Moby Dick kind of, sort of obsession.
Yeah.
But I actually thought that the sort of wider cast was actually pretty good. Sam Elliott was pretty good doing that Sam Elliott thing that he does. Jennifer Connelly was good, although she spent quite a lot of time looking up at the camera. I don't know if you saw that. Nick Nolte was in just about insane enough. Did you have anything you wanted to say about the cast?
Yeah, I think I liked them. Not my favourite iterations of those characters, which I've definitely said before. I think Nick Nolte is definitely a good choice because he just sort of gets into that role, and that worked quite well for me. But this is definitely just an issue with the script, but still could be the cast. Why wasn't anyone speaking up? Why were they all whispering throughout the whole thing?
I know. It was really frustrating.
It was really annoying.
And also the fact that Jennifer Connelly spent most of the time peering up at the camera.
Yeah. Talking about science at a really low level.
Science. I'm a scientist, Dad. But she did have quite remarkable green eyes, to be fair.
Yeah.
Actually, that's quite...
Unlike the Hulk.
I'm going to jump in there with an observation that I made, that the colour palette of the movie was predominantly green.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I didn't really pay attention, but now that you mention it,
Lots of green just is in the movie all of the time, which is a nice choice, I thought. But the sort of wider cast was also okay. The guy who plays the kind of traditional baddie, you know, the one who has the explosion where he flies towards the camera...
Classic.
He was okay, I thought.
Yeah, I didn't really think much of him, but that's because I thought he was in it more than he was.
Yeah.
So for me, there was just a big gap without him, and then he turns back up again. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, it wasn't a terrible cast. I do think, however, and we can move on from that it was a half decent cast fighting this is just my view, a terrible, terrible script. Do you have a view? I mean, do you have a view on the script?
No, I think the script was awful. A couple of lines that stuck out to me. My parents died when I was a small boy. I didn't need to know he could have just said when I was young.
As opposed to a big boy.
Yeah, exactly. And the one that really got me was, I don't know if I can even say it, damn it, drill him harder. I don't think they should have left in, to be honest.
I think that's from a completely different film, but let's move on swiftly from that point. Yeah, I thought the script was... Actually, the story and the script in this movie...
I was going to get onto that.
...are not the same thing. The story, fine. Yeah. It's a good origin story for the Hulk character. It does okay things. But the script, as you rightly have said, was just awful.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't enjoy the script. I do want to say about the story, and I'm sorry if this goes on forever, but when I say things like that, it's always really short. I really liked the story, and I think that's what's overlooked today, rewatching this film. I think it's very compelling in the way that it's told and the way that it works, and I think if it had maybe a better cast, definitely a better script, but wasn't about the Hulk, it would work perfectly fine. But because they have to shoehorn the Hulk into it, or maybe it's the other way around, they have to shoehorn a story into the Hulk, it just doesn't work as a formula. Like, mm-hmm. it should on paper, but doesn't in reality.
Yeah, I do actually agree with that. And sometimes our podcast is a series of aggressive agreements, but I think that the story as an origin story is perfectly good. And actually, there is a story to be told. I think it was really badly served by the script. And I have a feeling that partly the script was because this is one of those movies that was just in development hell for years.
Yeah.
The film came out in 2003, but the development of this movie started in 1990. It took 13 years to get from development into the actual movie itself. And in so doing, it goes through a number of different writers. You know, I mean, I don't, sort of don't want to name them, but it has, like, each iteration of the movie has a slightly different writer. And it's the job of the writer that's coming in to pick up on what they've done, try and improve it. And it's just a mess, in my view.
Yeah.
Actually, I've long held the view that when you watch a movie, if it says screenplay written by, and then about 8 names come up, you know it's going to be a terrible movie.
Yeah. Also, if it's produced by Avi Arad.
But if it says screenplay written by, and it's a single name... You think, okay, yeah, this might be quite good because it's a single writer's vision, not a committee of writers.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the choice and direction of Ang Lee?
Yeah, I think we should. We have to with this film, don't we?
You go first. I'm fascinated to hear what you think about that.
Well, I think there's two things that I kind of want to address with it. The first is, I think he knows what he's doing in terms of direction. Like, he can get actors to do what I'm assuming he wants them to do, even if it is a bit too quiet. But he's good in that sense. I would say he's probably a better character director than a movie director. And I think those two things are supposedly the same thing, but whatever. The other point is the editing. Obviously, he's not the editor, but he clearly has this vision of, let's turn it into a comic book movie. But it just looks trashy and awful and just does not work at all.
Yeah, I agree. If you look at his list of movies that he's made, okay, you've got so if you go into the mid-90s, Sense and Sensibility, he does Ride with the Devil, which is a good movie, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is a good movie.
Then, oh, I've seen that.
Then he does Hulk, then he does Brokeback Mountain, then The Life of Pi, then Gemini Man. And so there's all these really good movies in there. And I suspect he was chosen to do Hulk on the back of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is a good movie.
Yeah.
He was ranked the 27th, number 27 in The Guardian's 40th Best Directors. He's won Academy Awards. He's won Best Director for Brokeback Mountain and Life of Pi. And so it makes sense. And I think coming into the movie, he thinks, okay, I'm going to do a comic book movie. Why not? And therefore, I'm going to make it look like a comic book. But I just found it overwhelming. And I don't know whether that says something more about me or his directorial style, but I was just overwhelmed by all the split screen, quick cuts, some of the directorial choices. And I have to say, for me, it didn't work. I don't know if you feel differently, but for me, it was just a good try, but it just didn't work.
Yeah, I think there's a way to translate comic books onto the screen, and I don't think this is it. I think when you try and marry the two together so closely, it just doesn't work. Imagine watching or reading a comic book where all the pictures are moving, like Harry Potter style. It still wouldn't work. It wouldn't feel like a comic book. So why would it work if you make a movie look like a comic book?
That's exactly how I feel. They're two different mediums that can tell the same story, just in a different way.
Yeah.
And if you look at the kind of later Marvel movies, they're self-aware. They know they're comic books, but what they're doing is they're trying to place them within a real world setting. And so you take away the comic book element of it, and you tell a different kind of story. And I just thought the marriage of the two things didn't work. And there were some scenes that I'm sure were artfully directed, really nicely photographed.
Mm-hmm.
But it was either painfully slow or too damn quick. There was just nothing in between.
I think that in terms of making a comic book movie, you need to make sacrifices in certain areas. So the Hulk has a very deep human story, but doesn't translate well as a comic book film. Whereas if you've got a comic book film and you ground it in the reality of a comic book, it makes more sense. I'm thinking like Avengers Endgame here, where you know you have to get all of these characters together, but you also have to make it work. So in a sense, you get these little moments between different characters,
mm-hmm.
which is almost as if it's taken straight from the page, as opposed to this is a real life story, let's make it look like a comic book. That's not going to be interesting. You have to make it work and find the right method of doing that.
But the other thing that's happened in Marvel movies, certainly up until Avengers Endgame, and my knowledge of the more recent Marvel movies is less good, but they had a kind of, I don't know how you describe it, kind of wink to camera, self-knowing, self-humorous.
Yeah.
They kind of knew what they know that they're a bit silly, and they inject a bit of humor into it. Taika Waititi takes it too far, but something like Avengers Endgame has all these really deep themes and actually quite challenging story themes, but there's always a bit of humor in it, a bit of lightness, and that was very sorely lacking in this movie, which was just dour the whole way through. Is there any point where you thought, okay, there's at least a little nod to humor there?
No, not like I can't even think of anything like that, no. Apart from it just coming across as comedic when it shouldn't have, yeah.
Yeah, there are some moments that you laugh, and you laugh for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, more like cringe.
Neither has this movie answered the big Hulk question, which is why his trousers are always purple.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. I don't even think I really noticed that this time around.
Well,
yeah.
whatever Bruce Banner was wearing, his trousers were purple.
I'm sure there's like a throwaway joke in the Incredible Hulk film from 2008 where Bruce Banner goes to a market and he's about to buy some trousers and they're purple and he's like, no, not those ones.
Let's talk about the CGI Hulk while we're there on purple trousers. Yeah. What did you make of the CGI Hulk?
Oh, I'm going to be honest. I didn't think it was that bad. I think they knew what they were doing and it sort of worked. It was like where they actually put their focus to. The other thing I didn't like is the fact that their size isn't consistent. I don't know if that was a choice, but sometimes he's taller, sometimes he's wider. It was weird.
Well, I did my research into that, and I'll come back to my original question. And it is deliberately different. He's bigger in this movie,
right,
depending on how angry he is. So he's anywhere between kind of 9 foot tall and 15 foot tall and things. And he actually goes through three or four stages of development. So at the end of the movie, when he is at his most angry, he's bigger than he is earlier on when he's only slightly angry. So it's deliberate.
Right. Okay. That's fair enough.
I thought the CGI was okay for 2003.
Yeah.
You can clearly see in later Hulk iterations that it's got better. Did you know that Ang Lee was the motion capture and voice of this version of the Hulk?
I didn't know that. No, I do know that Mark Ruffalo is the only one who has the likeness of the Hulk later
yes,
on.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. I did think that. And I wonder if that annoyed Andy Serkis.
Possibly.
Who is the motion capture go-to guy? He's probably sat there. Right, they're making the Hulk. They're looking for motion capture, and you see Andy Serkis sat next to his phone for about 3 weeks waiting for it to ring. And then when it's announced in Variety that it's actually Ang Lee, he goes, fine.
And then, should have been me.
and then goes off and does King Kong instead. I wonder if there's any actor that is famous for never appearing on screen and playing a monkey twice.
Yeah.
That's got to be just Andy Serkis, right?
I would think so, yeah.
Can I drop in a little Andy Serkis moment here?
Go for it.
So he has read the most recent audiobook of Lord of the Rings.
Ah, yeah.
It's so good.
Oh, okay.
It's
cool.
That's all I'm going to say. It's like there's a very famous version of Lord of the Rings read by a guy called Peter Inglis. And that's really everybody's go-to. It's the audiobook. And Peter Inglis is this kind of ancient English actor. And he does all the voices and it's brilliant. But Andy Serkis is really good. The only thing that's mildly disconcerting is when Gollum appears and he's done the voice of Gollum, and he does the voice of Gollum, and it actually isn't quite right in the audiobook. The voice belongs in the movies. Anyway, that's my little Andy Serkis. Okay. If you're listening, Andy, your version of Lord of the Rings is amazing.
I don't know if you remember this, but obviously we'd seen this film and got quite bored of it. But it must have stuck with me somehow, because back in the day, I had a bunch of Hulk toys from cereal boxes. So the little ones that mystery ones that you would get.
Mm-hmm.
They were always very intricate and weird. So I remember one of them was to like balance on the side of a cereal bowl. So his arm was sort of jutting out. But I do remember having those. But I've only got one small memory of that, so it was a thing, and I did like it enough to do that, but I don't think it lasted long.
This is, it's a very good point you've made, because this is one of those films where the merchandising didn't match the movie. Do you remember the big Hulk hands?
Yeah.
And so you put your...
Oh, I do, yeah.
And you put your hand inside the things, and you could, and they were definitely this movie, not the quiet Ed Norton movie that came out a few years later. There was all of this stuff about Hulk, and it generated all of this excitement. If you're a six-year-old boy and you pop out to the shop and you buy your Hulk hands and you wear them to go to the movies to watch this movie, and then you see the movie, I can just feel the disappointment. It's still there with me 22 years later. You know, you sat there in your Hulk hands and your green Hulk mask, and you're faced with this incredibly dour movie. In which the only bit of action comes in the last 30 minutes of a 2.5 hour
exactly.
film.
Yeah.
The merchandising, they just got it all wrong. It was a complete mismatch of ideas, in my humble view.
I've just done a quick Google search actually for those toys, and they still exist. You can still buy them on eBay, and they're proper nostalgic actually, yeah.
I definitely want one. I want a little Hulk on my cereal bowl.
They all say desktop little... gadgets, yeah, but I might try and get one, yeah.
Excellent. I just actually did want to say one thing about the visual effects in this movie, and because I don't think they're very good, but the person who did the visual effects in this movie, or the visual effects kind of director, is a guy called Dennis Muren. And it's a name that probably doesn't roll off the tongue as a household name, but this guy, Dennis Muren, he is just... a legend of special effects. I mean, if you look at the films that he's worked on, they are extraordinary. He's Star Wars, Star Trek, Jurassic Park, Terminator 2.
Wow.
He is just all over the place. He won 5 Oscars in 7 years for special effects. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And he is the brains behind Industrial Light and Magic, and he's just a legend. Wow. He's a legend of special effects making. He was even a consultant and support to Peter Jackson when he was setting up Weta Workshop.
Okay, that's cool. So good for him, yeah.
So this guy that we're sort of vaguely criticizing for special effects, purple trousers and slightly muscular Shrek, is the legend of special effects in Hollywood.
Apologies if necessary.
Absolutely. So awards, how many Academy Awards was it nominated for?
None.
Correct. How many awards was it nominated for anywhere in the world?
None.
No, four. It got four nominations at the 30th Saturn Awards. Didn't win any. Best science fiction film, nominated. Best actress, Jennifer Connelly. Best music, Danny Elfman. Best special effects, Dennis Muren. But he didn't win any of them. Actually, we didn't say enough about Jennifer Connelly. She's actually quite good in this movie.
Yeah, I think if this was slightly a different scenario, I would probably do a Cardellini maneuver. But I'm going to have to resist.
I agree. Also, I have a feeling that if you invoke the Cardellini maneuver for Jennifer Connelly, when we finally get round to the next one, which is The Incredible Hulk, we'd have to have some kind of double Cardellini maneuver.
Yeah.
Because that's got Liv Tyler in it. And so, one Cardellini would not be enough. It had a budget. It had a budget of $137 million. Did it make or lose money?
Oh, lose, I'm hoping.
Well, not quite.
I can't say that.
Not quite. It had a box office of $245 million, which was considered hugely underwhelming. The general idea was that it was going to make sort of $500-700 million like Spider-Man did. And arguably, it was the reason why there were no more sequels, or at least not a sequel to this movie. Instead, there was a reboot. Yeah. So, yeah, there was a sequel. It was cancelled. And the stated reason for it being cancelled was it didn't make enough money. But there's a theory and a rumor that goes around that says when the studio saw the final movie, I'm reading this as you can tell, this is the word. When the studio saw the final movie, they were horrified.
Oh dear.
Apparently the decision not to make a sequel was made before the movie was released. And the studio braced themselves.
Oh dear.
Yeah. So there you go. You must have, therefore, many pieces of trivia. But first, let's go into one of our regular features, which I like to think of as Sam's controversial takes.
Yes. So there's two this time around. Okay. Do we need to explain the rules again?
For first-time listeners to our podcast, Sam will give a controversial opinion on the movie. If you hear the controversial opinion, it's because I've allowed it to stay in the podcast. Otherwise, you'll simply hear me say the word no. That's pretty clear, right?
I think that's pretty good, yeah.
So here it is, Sam's.
Just write that down.
We should have a piece of music here. Sam's controversial opinion. Da-da-da!
The first one, I didn't write this down properly, and I'm not going to say it properly because I'm paranoid, but you'll get what I mean. This movie would be great on narcotics.
I think I'll allow that, yeah.
Yeah, I think that one's allowable. I think they're both allowable this time around.
I think if you sat and, I don't know, if it was your thing and you enjoyed narcotics and you sat and watched this movie, you'd probably have a fabulous ride.
Yeah, not my thing.
And not my thing either.
This film is the reason why the delete button was invented.
Oh yeah, that stays in. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Also the fast forward button.
Yeah, exactly that, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I did quite well with my controversial opinions.
You got both in. I don't have a controversial opinion really about this movie, except to say that I would watch the movie. I would watch a cut of this movie that was just Jennifer Connelly in close up, and I'd enjoy it.
Okay,
just putting that out there.
Whatever you're into.
Moving swiftly on.
Trivia. I got a few bits actually. So bear with.
So I'm gonna have to stop there. You sounded like that pig from the Warner Brothers movies when you did that little noise then. What's the name of that pig? What's the name of that pig from the Warner Brothers movies?
Porky Pig.
Yeah, there.
Not intentional. I didn't know this, as most trivia goes. Edward Norton was actually approached to play Bruce Banner. I'll get my teeth back in.
Go on.
Bruce Banner, but he did turn it down because he didn't like the script, despite being a Hulk fan, which apparently has an impact. But he did obviously accept it later on.
Yeah, he did. I didn't know that. And it makes sense that he was the choice, because I think he's definitely a better Hulk than your man, Eric Banner.
Yeah.
Do you think he got the part because of his name?
Yeah. I would hope no.
Because I heard Hulk Hogan was up for the role.
Oh, that would make sense, yeah.
That was a lie, just because his name's Hulk.
Oh, yeah, I know. Much of the microbiology work that is actually on the screen is authentic and is courtesy of Ang Lee's wife. So that's a nice little detail.
Interesting. Did you notice that this was one of those movies where technology has dated the movie quite badly?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just even in the sense of how he turns. Yeah.
Yeah, never invoke modern technology in a plot, because it will always let you down on a rewatch 20 years later.
Yeah.
Most famously in a movie starring... Most famously in a movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger that I can't remember the name of, where about 90% of the plot is driven by somebody trying to find a telephone box to make a telephone call.
Oh, yeah. Is that Terminator 2?
Something like that.
That's a guess.
I don't know what film it is. It's one of those sort of 80s Schwarzenegger movies. And basically, yeah, about 90% of the plot is driven by, I need to get to telephone, I need to make a telephone call. And in the modern world, just pop your mobile out.
Yeah. I'm only guessing that because I've seen the meme where he's the Terminator in a phone booth. So, yeah,
it might
be that.
I don't know. It might be. If somebody else knows, they can let us know otherwise.
Nick Nolte grew his hair for this movie, and he was arrested for drunk driving, and that was his infamous mugshot. It's quite funny.
Oh, that's unfortunate, isn't it? You know, so otherwise, the generally suave Nick Nolte, who has inadvertently had one too many on the way home from an important pitch meeting in the studio, looks like an absolute homeless person.
Oh dear.
He's an intelligent man. He's an actor. He's probably thinking, oh, goodness gracious me, how did this happen? Bless him.
I feel like I could have brought this up a bit earlier, but it was one of my trivias, so I didn't. Because of the split screen comic book technique kind of thing, it sometimes required a lot of takes for one scene, which apparently drained Eric Banner. It took him 4 takes to film the Hulk's first transformation, and by the time it was completed, he was on the verge of collapse.
Wow.
Is it really worth it?
He had a thing to say about this movie, and he said he basically described the feeling on set like being in a morgue, and that the general idea was everything was being taken far too seriously. I can't find the exact quote, but yeah, he just said it was just like, no, it was just really hard work for him.
Oh, I wonder if he'll come back in there, one of the Avengers films, as a multiverse thing. I'd love to see that.
Well, you say that. He had a thing to say about that quite recently that I was going to mention, actually.
Oh.
So he was in 2021, when they were making Spider-Man No Way Home, he was asked whether or not he could see himself in a kind of multiverse. And he said, quote, when I went and did that film, it was like pre-Marvel universe. The universe didn't really exist. So it was always just like a one-off film, you know? So no, I never felt like it was something I was going to reprise. And I still feel that. I mean, after all these time, it's definite. Yeah, I can't see that happening.
Oh, that's a shame. I'd have loved to have seen him just a quick cameo.
I think it's all about money, though, isn't it? If someone came along and said, right, we're going to do a multiverse. We need Edward Norton, Eric Banner, Mark Ruffalo, Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno, who we have mentioned, but we didn't mention was actually in this movie. You'd go.
Oh, yeah.
You'd go and see that, along with Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Any more out-of-pocket takes and or trivia?
Last bit of trivia. Sam Elliott accepted the role without reading the script because he was excited to work with Ang Lee. Do you think he regrets it?
I think he does. The Sam Elliot thing is interesting because we have seen 2 movies with Sam Elliott in our benefit of hindsight journey. They are The Golden Compass and Hulk. Now, I think Sam Elliott is one of the finest actors of his generation. But the films that we're talking about have seen him not well serviced. Let's say that.
No, he needs to fire his agent.
or read script, right?
Yeah, true.
You don't,
yeah.
Okay, Ang Lee's a great guy, but read the script first. You can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. I was going to say you can't polish a turd, but I wasn't sure that was appropriate for our audience.
Out of pocket take.
Let's hear it. I'm excited.
In order to get the Hulk angry, they showed him the script. If this didn't work, he watched the editing.
I can see that. Yeah, right, Eric, we need to get you angry. Okay, yeah, right. What are we doing? Well, here's tomorrow's script pages. Okay, yeah, great. I mean, that's exciting. Would you like to see the daily rushes from yesterday's take? Yeah, sure, no problem. Yeah, I'll pop it. And the next thing you know, carnage in the screening room.
Have you ever seen that thing? Harrison Ford is obviously now Red Hulk in the MCU. Have you ever seen the thing that in order to get him to turn into the Red Hulk, they asked him Star Wars questions?
Yeah, I have not seen it. In fact, I haven't actually seen that movie. Is it worth watching?
I liked it, yeah. Interestingly, it's almost a sequel to The Incredible Hulk. It's got a lot of characters from that.
Okay, interesting. All right.
Spoiler alert, Liv Tyler.
Wow.
It's been out long enough. I think people would have seen it.
No, absolutely. Well, this is one of the things about our podcast is we revisit movies from our past. There's no question that we would have been in first in line to see that movie if it came out 20 years ago. But it's a fascinating exercise in how things and time and people and life changes. So I will watch that movie and then maybe one day we can come back and talk about it on this podcast in a very different way. I think I'm ready to go to my final score on this movie.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Let's
do it.
In fact, I'm staggered that we found so much to say about this movie. So I'm going to be brief, which is an oft-cited criticism of our podcast that I'm not brief enough. So I'm going to be brief. There are no circumstances under which I would ever watch this movie again.
Yeah.
I found it difficult to watch. I found it quite dull. And the only remotely exciting moment in the movie from somebody who likes a big bit of silly action was Hulk destroying helicopters that were simply too small.
Yeah.
I'm going to go into Benefit of Hindsight Podcast Hall of Fame because this is my first zero.
Wow. Okay.
I can't. I gave it one. It definitely isn't better than a one. And I didn't like it. So it's a zero. I'll never watch it again. I feel bad giving it a zero. And I want to give it a one for the Cardellini maneuver. But I can't. So it's a zero.
Fair enough. I'm going to flip the script. Yeah, I think too many uninteresting, dull characters. I think the script's terrible. The editing wasn't great. It was shot like a DVD menu. I meant to say that sooner.
such a good line. I wish I'd thought of that.
But do you know what? I'm going to do a weird change. And instead of a one, I'm going to give it a two.
Okay.
And the reason for that is, we say this a lot, but I think there's a decent movie trying to break out. I don't know if it's a Hulk film. I don't know if it's a psychological film. But somewhere in there, there is a decent film. And I think revisiting it later on isn't actually... It's hard to watch. It's difficult to watch. You have to actually want to watch it. But I think there's something in there that you can pick up on this time around. So yeah, 2 out of 10, gone slightly up.
I'm quite happy with that because it means that it gets a Benefit of Hindsight overall aggregate score of 1, which it probably deserves.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in the worst movies that we've seen as part of this podcast and probably in our long history of watching movies together. It probably would be in the bottom 3 or 4, but it probably deserves a point for something. Yeah. But I honestly can't give it anything. And shoot me down if you want to, listeners. That's fine.
I don't think they will.
Neither do I. So we both have given zeros to movies, and both of those movies have Sam Elliott in them.
Yeah, No correlation.
No. That reminds me of a movie anecdote which I'd like to share with you, if I may.
Okay.
If you go to Money, the most successful movie actor of all time is Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's really just longevity and the amount of popular movies that he's made. Second in that list, okay, so a person who's been in movies that have grossed the most is, and I'm really happy with this piece of movie trivia, is the magnificent Bernard Hill.
Oh, wow.
So he,
cool.
Because he was in two of the Lord of the Rings films, which were monumentally huge, and Titanic, which was monumentally huge. So this is a guy that's been in movies that have made nearly $4 billion and won 22 Oscars. So there you go. Bernard Hill. Rest in peace, cool. Bernard. We love you.
Yeah. What's your one-word review of Hulk?
Shit.
I don't want to leave that in.
There may well be two answers to this, listener. If you get the first one, congratulations and welcome to the real world. If you get the second one, my one-word review of this movie that isn't a swear word is underwhelming.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. But that would imply that you were expecting to be whelmed.
Yeah, and whelmed is a fascinating word, you know, because it's an orphaned... It's a positive. So there's a thing called orphaned negatives.
Okay.
So you say the word impeccable, we know what that means, but it also implies that the word peccable exists. And astonishingly, it does. It does exist.
Oh.
So you can be whelmed. You can be whelmed, which is just satisfied. You can be underwhelmed and you can be overwhelmed, but we don't use the word whelmed. You're welcome. Thanks very much.
My one word, and I thought about this, and I think it would be interesting if we turned this into one made-up word. My word is disaster piece.
I like
it's
it.
It's like masterpiece, but it's the complete opposite.
I like
it's
it.
A disaster
it's a disaster piece. Yeah. Yours is definitely better than mine. I had three or four goes at that, but one of them's true, but underwhelming is definitely the one I'm going to go with. I'm very excited to hear, however, what movie you have chosen for next week, because it's your turn.
Yes, it is. I have, in fact, chosen a film. It's a film that I wanted to watch a few weeks ago, but the timing just wasn't quite right about it. So I'm revisiting it now. It's a film that I've enjoyed in the past. So hopefully you did too. It's the 2007 Matthew Vaughn film, Stardust.
Wow. Yes, yeah, Stardust. I remember Stardust. That's the lady who lives in a field. There's a wall involved somewhere. Is that the one?
Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
Okay. I'm into that, but you have to go first with your opinion and score from memory.
Yeah, I think this was one of those ones where we saw it on New Year's Eve or around about Christmas when it came out. So I think there was the excitement around those. And I did enjoy when we did see things like that at that time. It's one of those nice fairy tale, easy watch films, I think. So I think I'm going to give it a solid 6 out of 10.
Okay. Six is good. I think that I am going to go somewhat similar. I do have... memories of this film. I'm going to say that I'm going to give it 7 out of 10 because I'm going to go in.
Okay.
I'm going to go in early with the Cardellini maneuver.
Oh, for who?
Claire Danes.
Okay, fair enough.
So I have fond memories of this with a really good cast. If I remember correctly, Henry Cavill is in it as well, pre-Superman.
Yeah.
Michelle Pfeiffer, Sienna Miller is in it. No, there's a decent cast there, and because it's got Claire Danes, who is one of my most favourite actresses of all time ever, and I'm going to give it a really strong 7 because I'm actually excited to watch it again.
Yeah, it's Charlie Cox pre-Daredevil theme as well.
Yeah, it's got a lot going for it, this movie, hasn't it? Yeah, okay, it's really exciting.
Yeah.
All right. It's also, I have a piece of trivia about this movie before we've even started it. Would you like to hear it?
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah.
I remember this fact from it being on the telly in 2007, back in England.
Ah.
It was co-written by a woman called Jane Goldman.
Right.
Who is most famous, or was, I don't know now, for being married to the television presenter Jonathan Ross.
Oh, wow.
So there you go.
I didn't know that.
Get that in early.
Yeah.
Ruin your trivia cool. for next week. So we have we have given this a whopping 6.5 overall from memory.
Wow.
Okay.
That's pretty good.
I'm very excited to go away and watch Stardust. Do you know there's another movie called Stardust, which is an early 1970s movie about a rock and roll singer starring the Cockney singer David Essex, who was my mum's favourite.
Oh, I didn't know that, no.
There you cool. go. Excellent piece of trivia there as well. Also, in keeping with tradition of the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, do you know what day it is today?
I do, yeah. I also know what day it was yesterday, which I wanted to bring up.
Let's go yesterday. Much more interesting.
It was Manatee Appreciation Day.
Oh, I love that. And I do appreciate a good manatee. I don't know about you.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Do you know the acronym of that is MAD?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think they're just having this on?
Possibly, yeah.
So what popped up for you is, what day is it today?
It's World Theatre Day.
Yes, that's what popped up for me as well.
Yeah.
That would explain why we've been so dramatic this evening.
Well, exactly.
I mean, you can't see from where you're sitting, but I'm doing jazz hands as we speak.
Wow. I'm not, but am I?
And I'm projecting. I am emoting. And I did my research today, and I have been deeply inhabiting the role of disgruntled movie watcher.
Very good, yeah.
Thanks. I've also just used another orphan negative. Positive.
Oh.
I said disgruntled, which presumably means wow. you can have the word gruntled.
Yeah. That's interesting. I like that. That's cool.
Well, if you celebrate or if you celebrated Manatee Appreciation Day yesterday and you're recovering today with a massive hangover, this is probably the best podcast to listen to. Very calm, very gentle. And if you are instead going out to enjoy theatre on World Theatre Day, you have yourselves a lovely time. And don't forget, you can buy choc ice in the interval.
Yeah.
That's the only time you ever eat a choc ice.
Oh, I know. They used to give it out as a treat in school.
Really?
Primary school, yeah. It used to be a big day when it's, oh, let's all have a choc ice. And they'd bring them all around.
What kind of hellish organisation did I send you to?
The choc ice kind.
Wow. Well, if I'd known that, I'd have written a letter. Dear school, imagine my disappointment when I learned...
Don't get me started on Jamie Oliver taking away cake at lunch, though.
I do have some experience of education, and I can verify that certain rumours are true. I have first-hand experience of having to ask a nice adult parent not to hand chips to their child through the school fence.
Wow.
There you go. So thanks, Jamie. It was a confrontation we could have avoided. Nevertheless, thank you. So I suppose on that Jamie Oliver-related bombshell, thanks very much for listening to our podcast. Please do send any questions that you have or comments or anything you want to say to us at the Benefit of Hindsight podcast at gmail.com. We do love to hear from you. And look forward to seeing you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Hey.
Is that a cat?
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?